End of the club season is in the books, finally over, and we have a UCL final really quick to discuss. We have a lot of international football to get to, the Copa America and the European Championship right around the corner next Friday, June 14th. Germany kicks off with Scotland, and we will do a preview show on that and those tournaments to come up. But today is about wrapping up the club season of 2023-2024 officially. Got some news going into the fall. We have Manchester City's trial, which hopefully will get them demoted one or two leagues. Possibly the Championship, League One would be better. Title strips would be nice, but not expected. And if that doesn't happen, I will gladly take the demotion in league. And I will gladly take the humiliation that Pep achieved actually nothing with a bought and cheated roster that no one else had any kind of hope of ever getting except for Man City. The accumulation of talent was back to 2009, a complete sham. And now they'll have to play and come back up through the lower leagues by the book, or hopefully. Nick, got a lot of stuff to get on with here. So how has your week been, man? We've both been busy. We're recording late this week, but it's been crazy. But there's a lot to get to.
Yeah, man. Great week. A lot of international ball. You know, absolutely. I like it when there's a credible break, one that actually belongs. I don't like the September-October thing. I think that's silly. So this break is actually much appreciated. I am enjoying the international football, World Cup qualifiers, Euros right around the corner. We did enjoy the Champions League final together, so of course we got to get to that. Yeah, we USA did. Plan, everything's coming up, man. And you know, even though international football is a thorn in our side, this break, like I've just stated, is actually one that I do appreciate, and we are fortunate to have the Euros this summer. So yeah, man, this we're going to switch on our international caps for a few weeks and enjoy this.
I want to say too that still if you actually look at teams that, you know, did something really special this year, you know, outside the Champions League, I got to say I'm still saying that, and I know Leverkusen is obviously the front runner, but that I'm talking about not everyone, not the popular choice here. So Real Madrid, take them out of the equation, take Leverkusen out of the equation just for a second, because Leverkusen are hands down the story of the year in club football. There's nothing Real Madrid could have done to surpass that. The fact that they became the first invincibles in German history, the fact that they won the domestic double and got to a European Cup final. They had one loss the entire season, and that came at the very end of May. They are still undefeated in Germany going all the way back to May of 2023. So that streak is still very much alive. They haven't lost a domestic game, competitive match in over a year now. And that's going to carry over into August of this coming year. So they'll be 14 months undefeated domestically, which is just insane. So take them out. That's like a cheat code, right? To me, it's Inter Milan. I still think that they are the best. Yes, sorry, City. Everything you've done the last 15 years is you're disqualified like Barry Bonds completely. So it's Inter Milan, two losses. I can't believe the two losses they had were to Sassuolo. That is insane to me, but they swept Juve, or they got 4 out of 6 points from Juve. They destroyed crosstown rivals Milan, 6 points out of 6 from them. They destroyed the Roman clubs. They destroyed Atalanta, who normally has been a thorn in their side. Lautaro, Thuram, Jan Sommer was the goalkeeper for the best defense, in my opinion, in all of European football. They had the back line. They had the midfield. Inter Milan was the total package, man. I just cannot find a club that they disappointed in Champions League. Obviously, they had Atletico Madrid on the ropes, dead to rights. And, you know, that tarnishes what was otherwise a dream season. But if you take that out of it, they're 20th Scudetto, two stars now, and Nick, you and I have both, I've gotten the Autobot kit for both of us, which I think is the sharpest kit in all of football this past club season, so we're going to rock that proudly. But what are your thoughts? I mean, that's just a quick, before we get into this Champions League final, I just still think that Inter deserve a massive praise and pat on the back for the season that they have just, you know, accomplished and put behind them.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We've been saying it. We've said it before they got eliminated, sadly, from Champions League due to penalties. I mean, this was their year to take it. This was their year where on the other side of the bracket, they had the strong teams that had to play each other, and they had a chance to make that final. And I really honestly believe if they won those penalties, they would have made the final, and they could have won the Champions League. I tell you what, if we had that same play from Madrid in the final that we did in the final, regardless, Inter Milan would have taken advantage of that, and they would have won that match. I mean, that is neither here nor there. I know we're going to get into the final, but Inter Milan, hands down, to me, and yes, to you, was probably the best side, you know, minus the Leverkusen that was in football, man. Just a great side to watch. Offensively, defensively, goalkeeping, everything, man. Tactically, just so sound and so strong. And it was just that one team that they could not, for whatever reason, beat. And if I'm not mistaken, Sassuolo got relegated. So
yeah, they did.
It's just one of those conundrums that freaking puzzles that can't be solved as to why they just could not beat that side. It's definitely,
it's kind of like Gladbach with Bayern. You know, Gladbach's been a thorn even when Pep was managing them. Gladbach beat Bayern constantly, and it just you know, it's just one of those things where a team just has your number. But I would have loved to have seen the matchup between BVB and Inter Milan because Atletico Madrid, Inter Milan has the scoring, the defense, and the striking power that Atletico didn't have. And with that said, BVB had majority of possession against Atleti, and I think Inter could have gone the opposite. It would have been interesting to see because at that point you go to the San Siro and you know, you're getting Turam, Lautaro, all this striking power. Yeah. And I just don't know. Like, that's just you all you have really with Atleti is like you have Griezmann, but you know, and he's past his prime. I think at this point, it's easy to say. Absolutely. That would have been interesting because then you get, you know, BVB beat PSG. I think Inter Milan, I favor them over PSG if that's who they would have met in the semis. And then you've got a Real Madrid Inter Milan final, which I think Inter Milan is a team that on paper could beat Real Madrid. I do. I really do.
No, you're not wrong at all. Yeah. I mean, especially after what we saw in the first 70 minutes of that final, I mean, Inter Milan would have 100% taken advantage of that. And I don't disagree with you, man. I mean, we both said it, man. Disappointing turnout was Inter Milan. They really had the opportunity to capitalize on what happened in this season, and they just didn't do it, man. It was sadly something that just didn't happen, and really they have themselves to blame, man. They should have closed out that match. And I will say Inter Milan are adding the best Asian striker in football in Tirami. He is incredible. If you don't know who he is, check him out. He scored a freaking wonder goal against Chelsea in the Champions League, I think a season or two seasons ago, and his name was ringing bells. And now Inter Milan have him coming in also to close out that front attacking line. And man, let me tell you, he is going to ring. His name is going to be said a lot next season. He could win. I feel he could win the Golden Boot in Italy. I know that's crazy to say, but I'm telling you, this guy is very good, very good, clinical, very good finisher, so be ready for that. He's going to be a great addition next season.
I think the league of the year was Serie A. I really do. I think that they had the best league in terms of entertainment. Their top five
was
besides the title, huh?
Even their bottom fight was entertaining.
So that's where I'm getting at, right? Yeah, so the top, it's like the top half of the table, everyone was included in the European fight until the very end. You had Fiorentina was in a final. They got to the final stages of the season with Europe still possibly intact. Atalanta was out of the Champions League for most of the season. Then they got into the Champions League based on their top five finish and Italy's coefficient. But then they didn't even need that because they won the Europa League. So they automatically qualify, which brought Roma possibly into the mix. So all Atalanta had to do was finish in the at fifth place, and then the Roma goes to the Champions League as the sixth team from Italy. But then on the final day, Atalanta finishes in fourth, and Roma's out of it completely. Now Bologna's in fifth, and Bologna goes as that fifth team that goes to Champions League. Bologna hasn't been to Champions League since 1811, so that's great to see. Juventus, you know, they choked down the stretch. Milan was there for a little while. Inter ran away with it, but that second through like eight was so exciting. And then the relegation battle was 13 through 20. I mean, it was everyone. Yeah. If you weren't in the top 10, then you were in the bottom eight, so to speak. Yeah. And you had three spots that eight teams at any given point could have occupied. To me, Serie A was the most exciting league from top to bottom. And I include so Bundesliga, you know, there was a lot to be excited about this year, but there was such a drop off from Dortmund to Frankfurt in terms of points that the top five was really decided way back. I mean, February, March, right? That is not the case in Italy. In fact, it switched all in the last 2 weeks. Bologna went from fourth to fifth. Atalanta went from fifth to fourth. You had Atalanta winning the Europa League, which then brought, like I said, Roma into the mix. It was so exciting. What are your thoughts? To me, it's Serie A was the best league in Europe. I think the best league in Europe to me equals the best league in the world. I have to give Serie A their props.
Yeah, no, I agree, man. I mean, we knew how England was going to end. I mean, Jesus Christ, four in a row, Lord of Mercy. I mean, I'm telling you, those executives are screaming for a change. That wasn't definitely the best. All the people hype it up like it is, but we know it was not. Serie A was 100%. They were split. It was like musical chairs, man. Roma, fourth. Roma, sixth. Bologna, third. Bologna, second. Down to fourth. Then fifth. Juventus, then second. Right next to Inter. Then they Inter beat them. And then Inter escapes with first. Like, it was definitely a great league, and not to mention the bottom, where we were constantly seeing the flip-flopping of the relegation sides, and it was a fight till the end, till the last second, till Empoli scored that goal in the 90+4. You had no clue who was going to Serie B. You didn't know, and that is what you look for in a league, and gratefully so, me and you both appreciate Italian football. We appreciate Italian management, Italian tactics. We appreciate the league. And we love Serie A, man. We really do. I thought that they were pretty much, I'm right with you, man. I mean, I can't even really argue Germany because Leverkusen ran away with it. Bayern was nowhere to be found. That was great to follow. Their downfall was, but a league as a whole, top to bottom, from 20, 22, whatever, to one, Italy was hands down great to follow. We definitely had a great time watching it. Spain was pretty much done. You know that. It was cool to watch Girona. France was done December, whatever, after Nice fell. So I'm with you, man. Italy was great. Italy was definitely the league of the season, if we want to call it that. I'm with you on that one.
Yeah, I mean, it's just you had so much excitement, and it was must see TV, and they, you know, they obviously had they went a week longer than the Premier League and the Bundesliga did in France. Yeah, you had La Liga and the Serie A went to an extra week because they had 38 matches. And you know, there was nothing was solidified. Empoli scores that goal to keep themselves up on the final match day. And then Bologna, like I said, flip-flops with Atalanta, which affects another club, Roma, that they had to rely on Atalanta to do them the favors. Yep. That's exciting football to me. That when you have that much movement, because the argument can be made, you said, well, Leverkusen ran away with it. Well, Inter ran away with it too. Inter were champions by March. I mean, it was done, but it's not about necessarily the championship. And I love the fact that Inter are the fourth different champion in the last 4 years. You had Inter, then you had Milan, then you had Napoli, and now Inter again. And before Inter, it was Juve. So really, they've had five different champions. No one's repeated. You've had five different champions in the last 5 years in Serie A. You couldn't ask for anything better than that. You can't get that in France. You can't get that in England. You can't get that in Spain. And you damn sure can't get that in Germany, because it's been 12 in a row for one club. And now Leverkusen saved the world. But who's to say Bayern's not going to fire back next year? You know? So
agreed.
But Bayern, it could have been 3 in 3 years for Germany, because it could have been Bayern, then BVB, and then Leverkusen. But BVB did not help us out in that, that aspect. So, you know, that's why Serie A was the most exciting league. And I just have to say that I'm looking forward to it next year. I think that you have some excitement. I think that Napoli had this down year. I think they're going to be back. Milan's not going. But Inter, just right now, I think next season is Inter's chance to win the Champions League. I think this is, you know, you were in the final last year. You got to the knockout stage this year. You lost to an inferior team. And they need to let that pain really drive them, that you lost to Atletico Madrid when you had them beaten. They were beaten. They were dead.
Yeah.
And then BVB absolutely annihilated Atletico Madrid at the Yellow Wall. They beat the dog crap out of them. 4-2, wasn't it? Wasn't it 4-2?
Yeah, the second leg was 4-2.
Atletico Madrid's this great defense, and BVB were scoring goals for fun.
Yeah. It was
that's who Inter Milan let knock them out.
Yeah.
So, very disappointed in their European season. I'm very disappointed in Inter's European season. But domestically, I could not have been happier with it. And, this is a league that is, to me, back on the rise again. It's been in decline since the mid-2000s. And I think that we're seeing sort of a renaissance of Italian football, Serie A, especially top flight.
Yeah, Antonio Conte is back at Napoli. He's back in Italy, and they're
excited to see what Napoli is going to do, because Conte goes to places and they win trophies.
Yeah, immediately, and they've already made their first offer for Lukaku, and they're already looking to sell Osimhen to PSG. So they're looking to bring in over 100 million, and then they're going to immediately try to get Lukaku to replace him, which not the same, but yes, I mean, he will get you some action, and I look forward to the next year with Napoli also, man. They Kvaratskhelia is one of the best midfield wingers that have come out of Georgia probably ever, and I really I know City were trying to get him. I know if they can hold on to him and keep Conte, then they'll be absolutely fighting for that title. So yeah, a lot to look forward to with Italy, man. I agree.
Real quick, from the top five leagues, I'm going to name my five most surprising teams that I thoroughly enjoyed seeing them succeed this year, and then I'll name my five most disappointing teams. So in Germany, for me, it's Stuttgart. Stuttgart were absolutely they had a dream season. They won the title in 2007. They scored more points this year than they did in that season when they won the title. So this is technically on paper like Stuttgart's best season ever. If they had played the year before and had the same points total, they would have been German champions last year. They would have beaten both BVB and Dortmund. So that's just amazing. I'm sorry, BVB and Bayern. Sorry. Stuttgart. And then, of course, the year that they have their dream season, Leverkusen puts on a show for the ages. So they just, you know, struck out. In England, it's Aston Villa all the way. And that carries over into France with Brest, because no one expected them to do what they did. Spain, Girona, but again, the City money train's behind them, so we'll see how far that takes them, because I think that their City football group's facing a world of pain come the fall in terms of especially their top prize. And then in Italy, it has to be Bologna, because Bologna's been mid-table to lower table for so long, and then now they're playing Champions League. So those are my top five surprise clubs that I just enjoyed. I enjoyed watching their stories unfold this year. Did you have any different ones, or did you agree with all those?
Stuttgart. I mean, Leverkusen's the obvious answer there, but Stuttgart was the definite shocker. I mean, I think I'm really excited to see how they do next year. I know you don't think they have too much of a chance. We've talked about that before.
Well, they're going to lose everybody. Girassi's already on the way out. Girassi's got one foot in Dortmund. And if Dortmund get him, that's fantastic. Like, that's going to strengthen Dortmund. But he's a guy that scored 28 goals, Nick. He's gone. He's not going to stay.
I definitely agree that this year was kind of their chance their shine, you know, just like we would think it would be BVB in that position, but it was Stuttgart who were in second, who could have taken that spot. But Leverkusen had such a good year.
Here's what I did understand. I told you not to interrupt. Sorry. I told you that I listened to the Stuttgart episode from the German podcast that I listened to. They did an hour and a half of just Stuttgart. I did learn that besides Gerasi, they re-signed everyone pretty much to extensions. So if they do sell people like Undav and Valdemir Antone and Nubel, they're going to get a pretty penny in return for them.
Yeah.
Everyone signed extensions.
Oh, wow.
So Stuttgart, so that's the problem, right? You lose everyone and you get some new people in. Do they gel? Is this because Stuttgart right now are a team that has great chemistry, but they at least will not be with a cupboard empty with no money. They re-signed everyone early, and so everyone's under contract, I believe, until at least 2027.
Wow. Well, fresh news, hot off the press. Looks like he might be going to the Premier League, man. West Ham are gonna.
Who?
Gerasi.
We'll see. That it's early. We gotta wait. A lot of transfers are gonna happen after the Euros. Yeah, so we'll see. But I do believe I think that he'll stay in Germany. I think he knows. I think he's smart. He knows that the next step for him is Borussia Dortmund. That would be. And if you go there and score 30 goals, then you can go. West Ham is a dumpster fire. I wouldn't go there if you paid me. So that's a career killer. That's a career killer for me.
Yeah.
I wouldn't go there. I'd go to Dortmund and I'd go play Champions League next year. Okay. That's another thing. You're going to go to Dortmund and play Champions League? You're going to be in a European competition that they were just in the final of? Or are you going to go to West Ham and play nothing?
Yeah, I mean,
it's all about the money, I guess, right?
Yeah, it's all about the Benjamins, baby. I mean, whoever.
It used to be about playing Champions League.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean.
And West Ham ain't going to sniff Champions League in our lifetime, brother.
Yeah, it used to be about loyalty and all kinds of stuff, too, man. We don't see that no more.
Thank you, Marco Royce, for your service.
Yeah, you got a guy who stays with the club, and then he's praised for doing what people did 20 years ago all the time. So it's just time.
Yeah, Paolo Maldini, those days are gone. Paolo Maldini,
Totti, they're all done.
Yeah.
You won't see Totti. He stayed at Roma.
Francesco Totti, Gary Neville for United.
Yeah, like you
Kenny Dalglish for Liverpool. Those days are over. Yeah,
you will not see it. So.
Old Bastian Schweinsteiger for Bayern, Philipp Lahm for Bayern. Yeah, those days are over.
Yeah, so you don't see it anymore. So who knows, man? I mean, I totally understand. I mean, West Ham did win the European trophy, the Conference League, 2 years ago, but they have completely fallen off.
When's the last time you remember them winning a game? They've lost every game that I can think of, March, April, May.
No, they had a complete and utter
collapse.
Yeah, they
had David Moyes got the sack. I mean, it's just it's a dumpster fire in London with them.
The other thing too,
I want to mention is the last guy standing, the last Trojan horse standing, is that's loyal to a club is, to me, that I can think of off the top of my head is Thomas Müller, because he's been at Bayern his entire career.
Oh yeah, he hadn't gone anywhere. Yeah, no, that's a great example, man. I mean, he stuck through it. And he'll even come off the bench. He doesn't complain.
Nope.
He doesn't start all the time. Like he's definitely someone who trucks along and sticks to his side. I know we kind of went off on a tangent there. I'm gonna say, I think Aston Villa. You're right with the England team.
Yeah.
Premier League. That there really no one else. I mean, Arsenal did the same thing they did last year. They were in first and then blew it. Liverpool. Yes, they were up there. And they absolutely bottled the game versus Crystal Palace and then lost to Everton. So, mm-hmm. I mean, you can't really say that anyone else did anything. I mean, Aston Villa were the shock of the year in England. I agree. Champions League ball for Aston Villa. I mean, the crazy thing is their history is full of all kinds of trophies and whatnot. But I never have seen them do anything. I got to watch them in the championship. Play in championship playoffs and get promoted like that. So it's been a long road for Aston Villa. I agree with you on that one. And really, man, did you say France?
Yeah, I said Brest.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
It's funny, in all leagues, we had a side make the Champions League that you do not see. Girona for Spain, Brest for France, Stuttgart for Germany, Aston Villa for England, and who am I leaving out?
Bologna.
Yes, Bologna for Italy. Five big leagues, the five quote-unquote big leagues, all saw new, I'm not talking about history. In the past 10, 15 years, all these teams have not been to the Champions League, and here we are. Mm-hmm. We're going to see them in the group stage, and boy, it's going to be exciting. I think Brest got qualification. They have to make it through qualification, but they're automatically
They jump into the late qualifying rounds.
Yeah, they jump in the last two rounds, and I don't see Liga Warsaw or anyone like that giving them a chance. So yeah, man, you're pretty spot on with the teams that definitely gave us a surprise, man.
Well, let's talk about the opposite effect. So for me, the biggest disappointment in Italy was Napoli by far. They had one of the worst title defenses I've ever seen in my life. They go from Champions League and Scudetto to not even making the Champions League the next season. So Napoli, absolute disappointment for me. In Germany, I was expecting a lot more out of Frankfurt. I thought that the two strikers, the two players they have up front hate each other. So they actually don't pass each other the ball. It's like Frankfurt is a energy devoid machine that just goes out there and plays. And 1 week they beat Bayern 5-1 or whatever it was at the end of this the first part of the season. And then the next week they can go out and lose to Augsburg 3-0. And somehow Frankfurt, with a meager 46 points or whatever it was, were about to make Champions League if Dortmund could have beaten Real Madrid and had no right to be there. I mean, God, one of the worst sides to ever directly qualify for Champions League. But Frankfurt just, you know, they finished sixth, so people would look at the table and say, well, that's not bad. I mean, God, look at the top five teams above them. Right, but it's the way they played. It's the way they got to six. It's just that the rest of Germany were just, you know, the middle of the pack was just kind of mediocre. And, you know, Frankfurt just kind of lifeless kind of fish just flopping around week to week. Yeah. So they were a big disappointment for me, especially 2 years ago winning Europa League. Last year they got to the Champions League knockout stage, qualified for Europe again. Yeah, they're qualified for Europe again this year. I mean, they'll go back to Europa League, but it just, the way they got there, you can just tell that the team is just kind of dysfunctional. For me in England, it's got to be Chelsea, even though they had a strong finish. Their first 30 weeks or so were just absolutely god-awful. I thought that they were the most and Poch paid with his job. I mean, you know, I thought that he did enough to save it at the end. But you can't play 5 or 6 weeks of great football at the end when you had 32 bad weeks to start and then expect to, you know, I guess have a really good review at the end of the year. It's like, yeah, you didn't even have a good quarter of the season. But Chelsea, all's well that ends well. They did finish towards the top of the table, nowhere close to the super top, to the top three, but they ended on a high note. They had momentum going into next season, but now the guy that got them there, that carried them with that momentum, that got them that momentum, is gone. So Pochettino out. Chelsea, though, has got to be the biggest disappointment. In France, it's got to be Nice. Their defense was so locked down at the beginning of the season. They were top of the table, and their collapse, not even finishing in the top three, the fact that they just completely fell off. Nice, I thought, were headed for great things this season, and they just, I mean, after Christmas, they just belly flopped. Just complete and utter discombobulation. The defense wasn't what it was anymore, and they couldn't score. The problem was, at the start of the season, they couldn't score, but they had only allowed like 4 goals. They conceded 4 goals in like 9 weeks or something like that. It was insane, their defensive record. And then it all fell apart.
Yeah.
Spain, for me, was, you know, the biggest disappointment for me was Atletico Madrid in the league. The fact that they fooled around with not even finishing in the top five for much of it. They ended up finishing back in Champions League again. That's great. But I just thought that Simeone, I almost called him Simone Inzaghi. Diego Simeone, sorry.
Yeah.
I just don't know if his time's not up, man, because he's got this blueprint that he just goes with, and it's like, hey, we'll give you 70% possession and we'll just counter you and we'll win a game 1-0. And it's like, look, man, that you've been doing this stuff now for over a decade or whatever it's been, and it's just old. It's just old. You're never going to win a Champions League like that. Yeah, he won La Liga a couple of seasons ago, but they're nowhere close to it right now. I mean, even Barcelona, who's like $2 billion in debt, they don't have any problem finishing above Atletico. So, I mean, that's just they're just a disappointment to me because they're so stale. They're like a stale piece of bread. Yeah, sure, you have the roster to get you top four, but are you satisfied with that? Is that all? That's your ambition? Like, they're just not to me. And the fact that Dortmund just absolutely hammered them in the Champions League just shows you they're not the same Atletico they were 3-4 years ago. The same Atletico that knocked out Klopp's Liverpool from the Champions League that were beasts, defending Champions League champions or defending Champions League winners. Atletico Madrid go to Anfield and win. They didn't win, but they did enough at the on the home fixture, and then they went to Anfield and finished the job right before COVID shut down the season. And in Germany, you know, I already said Frankfurt, and then you go to England. I said Chelsea. Well, the last stop on the bus is I said it was Italy. Have I covered everyone?
Yeah, you did.
Okay. So Okay. So those are my disappointments. Who were your biggest disappointments of the season in terms of like who you expected great things from and they just didn't deliver?
Yeah. I guess I got a few. Yeah. I got some differences. I mean, so we'll start with Germany, man. I have to say I expected a lot more out of Union Berlin. They literally were saved by a penalty miss and then miraculous make at the very end to save themselves from the relegation playoff. To say that and then go from a Champions League group stage is insane, if you ask me. We don't see Champions League contenders in group stage that are inside the top five fight for relegation. So I have to say Union Berlin is a big one. Frankfurt is definitely disappointing, though. Also, you're not wrong there. I will say Italy, for me, Juventus not really giving that fight to Inter Milan was a very upsetting. I expect a lot out of Juventus. The whole world does. Their fans do. They fired the manager. I mean, they have that prestige and They expect a lot out of their club. And if you don't give them what they expect or what they feel they deserve, then they will fire you and you will move on. It's just like a lot of the Arsenal fans are screaming like they want to be fire the manager because they have expectations. You know, Juventus, you're expected to win that title every year. Even though Napoli's titled events was one of the worst, I agree with you there. I'm just kind of thinking of someone other than your surprises or your good for the season were pretty spot on. I will say we'll go to England, and for me, disappointing. I don't know, man. You know, I want to say Liverpool because I really expected them to be battling with City to the end, and they bottled it at the very end. Very disappointing. Chelsea was, yes, it was a little disappointing, but because they ended on such a high note, they are in European competition, but because United won the FA Cup, they got booted down to the Conference League, which is what no one wants to go in. So I can agree with you there also. France, you gotta, I don't know, man. I mean, France, you gotta go with Lyon. But then they rebounded so good, man. I mean, the rebound from Lyon was incredible. Me and you both talked about that a lot. They came back so strong. So to say they had the disappointing season, I don't really want to say that. But that's definitely a noted spot right there. That their first half of the season was incredibly bad. I mean, we even did 30 minutes on them. I mean, that's how bad it was. And I'll say Spain, man, I got to go with Sevilla, man. Sevilla, one of the top four.
That's a good one.
Sevilla, one of the top four, top five in Spain. you disrespect them, they will kick you out of Europa League so fast, you don't know what hit you. If you get them in Europa League, you can already count your chickens. You're going home. You will not beat them. So to see them fight kind of at the end to kind of stay up, that was pretty depressing. And I will say that was bad. Atleti is another good one though. Also, man, you're not wrong there. So really, man, me and you together, hell, we got a hell of a list of disappointments and surprises of the season. I mean, there's not really much we missed there. From Union Berlin to Sevilla, we covered it, man. That's Sevilla was bad.
Yeah, I love your Union pick because they were Champions League and they basically took till match day 34 to stay up. So that's a really good.
At the very end, too.
To me, yeah, I expected Frankfurt. The reason I said Frankfurt is because I expected them to kind of push into the top four this season, top five, and they were just a lifeless, like I said, a flopping fish out of water. And the rest of the league was just so mediocre that they just by default stayed in the top six. But no honor in being sixth place this year in the Bundesliga. It's if you're not top five, then you really didn't do that much. And yeah, I think your France prediction also your France pick was also spot on. But let's pick real quick to wrap it all up in one big bow. Let's pick the player of the season in each league. And I have a surprise. I pretty much went chalk with all of them, so except for one. And the one I'll tell you that I did not pick that the media picked was England. But I'm going to leave that for last. For me, Germany, hands down, Florian Wirtz. He's the player of the year. I don't think there's any debating that. Serie A, Lautaro Martinez, player of the year. Absolutely, you know, a top goal scorer for Inter. He carried them, you know, through the season, reliable, dependable, clutch, just a complete marksman in every shape of the word. And he just signed a nice fat extension, deservedly so. So that's for me, Italy, without question, is Lautaro Martinez. Spain, Jude Bellingham by a mile. I don't think we have to debate that. What he did at Dortmund was fantastic, but what he did at Real Madrid this season in his first year is insane. I mean, he immediately enhanced their team. And I don't know without Jude Bellingham if you see Real Madrid in the Champions League final. I really don't. I think they may have been out long before the final. And I don't know if Jude Bellingham didn't score about a million 90 plus whatever goals in the league.
Yeah.
If Girona or Barca don't maybe win the league this year. I mean, Jude Bellingham was an impact player. And I'll be the first to tell you, who said he was going to bust? Who said that Jude Bellingham was going to be a bust?
Yeah, you. Yeah.
I did. Yeah. And I'm a person who admits when they are wrong and have no shame in doing it. I was completely wrong about Jude Bellingham.
Yeah.
So
my
player of the year in Spain, player of the year in France, and in France only, I hate to even do this, only in France, just understand, only in the Ligue 1.
Yeah.
So that doesn't count for very much.
Yeah.
But Kylian Mbappe is the player of the year in the Farmers League that we know as Ligue 1. Yeah. So I'll give him that. I'm not going to say much more than that. It's a title that if I drove through Paris, they would throw it in my window if I had at a red stoplight. So it's you know. And the one Nick that I am going different with is in England. So the media picked Phil Foden. I'm picking Cole Palmer. And I picked Cole Palmer because he had such an impact on Chelsea. I know for a fact that Chelsea would not have finished in the top six in England if Cole Palmer had not been on their squad. The goals he scored, the assists that he handed out, the absolute impact player that he was off of a nothing transfer from Man City, because they simply couldn't put him on the pitch anywhere and he wanted to play. That is all the signings Chelsea had, the inflated signings, the unbelievable money wasted and spent on these players that contributed absolutely fucking nothing. And they get Cole Palmer for pennies to the dollar. And he comes in and he is world class. I got to say, that kid impressed the hell out of me this year. He is my Premier League player of the season because City's loaded with talent. You could basically pick, you could have picked Haaland, you could pick Foden. The EA Sports, for example, picked Phil Foden. Congratulations, EA Sports. But I tell you what, for me, no one had more of an impact in their first season, keeping a team to where they like below expectations, but just getting them back in the picture of relevancy than Cole Palmer did. That he is my pick for player of the season in England. So I'm going to let you give your five now. I'm sure that probably some of them will overlap because I think that like Florian Wirtz is a no brainer. I think it's idiotic. I'll say the best transfer is Grimaldo because he was a free. He was a free transfer. Leverkusen signed him for $0 and 0 cents.
Yeah.
So, but player of the season, the guy that carried Leverkusen, that was their spine, was Florian Wirtz. But you get to give me your five from each league real quick before we wrap this club season up.
Yeah. Germany. I agree with you. Wirtz, I mean, they couldn't have done it without him, man, hands down. And what they did was absolutely incredible. I mean, I really no need to spend too much time on that one. The Spain, Jude Bellingham is spot on. The guy was freaking amazing. He changed everything for that side. They played without a striker, and they were able to do so because of him. So that's another one, man. Without him, we possibly could have had some other stuff going on in Spain and then also a different ending for the Champions League season. We got in Italy, Lautaro, he won the player of the season, and I greatly agree so. What he did was incredible for Inter Milan. I think his teammate, Cherkaloo, he got like he was right behind him with what
he was midfielder of the season. Hakan Çalhanoğlu was midfielder of the season. Yeah.
Yes. His midfield play was absolutely incredible. You know, this is a team sport, and when you're that good, it goes to show that everyone, hell, even someone behind Lautaro got an award. So that covers three of the leagues. France, Mbappe doing his thing over there, showing why people love him so much. You know, yes, it is a league no one really watches or cares about because of how easy and simple it is for Paris, but he did do it. He still got to kick it. And then we will go to England, where I actually agree, man. Phil Foden, great player he is. He's surrounded by world-class talent. Cole Palmer, he was Chelsea. He changed everything for Chelsea. When he went out, they lost. When he was in, they did well. When they're fighting over penalties, when he walked up and took that ball, everyone shut up. Everyone backed off. He is the guy that changed everything for Chelsea. For getting him for $40 million is a joke. The guy is one of the best players on this planet Earth right now. He showed it yesterday in the loss to Iceland. The play he had, he is fighting for his starting spot with the idiot who runs that side. He is fighting to start, and he deserves that start. If he doesn't, it's a mess up on him. He's one of the best on the planet Earth right now. I agree with you. I will say, I want to add in that someone not a lot of people are talking about. A lot of people give him a lot of flack because he was so expensive. But Mr. Moises Caicedo absolutely turned around at the end of the season and ended it on a great high note. He played absolutely wonderful the last 12 matches. His rating was through the roof. He was averaging almost an 8. He was playing incredible. And it showed because Chelsea won a lot of matches and they got themselves over United, over Newcastle in the standings, and that changed everything. Cole Palmer, yes, and Moises Caicedo is right behind him. He was too expensive, but he is now showing why he did cost a little bit. I will say that I do expect a lot more out of him next year, and I will also say that Enzo is in trouble. He is not becoming the player that people wanted him to be. But you're yeah, man, that was very enlightening. That was fun. I agree with Cole Palmer, and hit the play around him really helped too from Moises. That changed everything for them, and they saved and salvaged their season to where they were not a complete joke. Still a little bit of a joke, but not a complete joke. And yeah,
just a little bit.
Yeah, just a little bit. They saved themselves from being the laughing stock. So yeah, man, that caps that off there, man. Great end.
The final thing we're going to talk about, let's not spend too much time on it, but the Champions League final, which was the final match of the club season in terms of the major stuff. There were a couple of playoffs, obviously relegation stuff after that and lower tiers, but we're not going to count those. So for 70 minutes, Borussia Dortmund were the better side. They controlled the pace of the match. They controlled most of the critical possessions. And it's like I told you, when you're playing Real Madrid in a final, it says 0-0 at the start of the match, but it's really 2-0 Madrid. You just don't see it yet because you know at some point they're going to take their chance that they get and they're going to convert. It may take them 75 minutes to get a chance. You can ask Bayern Munich that. They will, though. When they get their opportunity, they will score. So it's one of those Easter eggs. Like, you know, they have these video games and you have Easter eggs you got to find. Madrid really has a cheat code that they're up 2-0 before the match even starts. You just don't know who's going to score it and when it's coming, but it's coming. Just understand that. So yeah. Dortmund had Adeyemi had every opportunity. I mean, just a complete blown chance against Courtois. Then you had Füllkrug near misses. It hits the post. 2-0 to Borussia Dortmund, which actually means if everyone's following along, that means it's 2-2. And if Dortmund can score the third, they win the Champions League. Or at the end of regulation, then we go to extra time because, as we found out later, off of the corner, and then shortly thereafter, Madrid scored two goals, which would have been 2-1 and 2-2, the equalizer, as I said, 0-2 to start the match. Now 2 for Dortmund, 2 for Madrid, and we go to extra time. Maybe we get to penalties and maybe Dortmund has a chance. But, you know, when you get your chances against Madrid, you know, like Bayern did, they scored 1-0. They were up at the Bernabeu. What did they lose by, Nick? 2-1, right?
Yeah.
Real Madrid got there too. They're going to get two no matter what. So to me, two things in this match. One, Terzic made his substitutions too late. I think that Royce and the subs came on far too late. He should have probably started subbing out in the 60th minute instead of the 70th. That is one crucial error. I thought that Dortmund played a fantastic match. Fantastic match for the first 70 minutes. I could not have imagined a team playing with more heart and soul and desire than Borussia Dortmund did. And it was still 0-0, man. And that, if you entered the final 20 minutes of a European Cup final against Real Madrid and it's level, you have got to know that hell is coming for you. It's coming for you. And it did. And it eventually got him. And the shortest player on the field, the shortest player, scored a header on a corner. And that put him up 1-0. And when Real Madrid got up 1-0, Dortmund had every bit of air was let out of that balloon. It was deflated and it never filled back up. It didn't matter. Marco Reus is playing his last match, whatever. There was no life left in him. And it was honestly just a matter of time before the 2-0 fell. So you and I watched it together. We both had the highest of hopes. And I say to Dortmund, I'm proud of you guys. You guys fought, and by far the inferior roster on paper. There was no, honestly, it could have been 4-0, 5-0, and it wasn't. They took the fight to Real Madrid. Real Madrid got punched in the face for 70 minutes. But when you punch Real Madrid, you, like Mike Tyson, you've got to knock him out. You've got to knock him out. I'm talking prime, early Mike Tyson, Buster Douglas. If you get that shot, you got to knock him out. Because if you don't knock him out, he's going to come back with some haymakers and he's going to knock you out. And that's exactly what happened. But how did you see it, Nick, from your perspective? And by the way, Mats Hummels, yes, sir. Go for that red card, that handball to keep that ball out. Anybody that says otherwise is an idiot.
Yeah.
Idiots. You're in a Champions League final and you have a ball that is 100,000% going in. You've conceded the goal against Real Madrid. And if you concede a goal against Real Madrid with the more tired and fatigued roster with less depth, and you know from top to bottom that Real Madrid is a who's who of football and you're not, yes, take the handball, get the red card, get ejected, and keep the goddamn scoreline at 0-0 and hope that maybe Kobel can keep it out. If he does, you still have a snowball's chance. You park the bus. I don't care what anyone says. You do whatever it takes. You're the underdog. You don't get tomorrow. This isn't a home and away. This isn't a two-leg fixture. This is winner take all today. So if Hummels, it looked like he appeared to try to get the handball, the intentional handball, and I commend you for that, sir. God, I wish he would have gotten his hand on it, because then Real Madrid at least has to convert the penalty. And if you know what they do, then you lose 1-0. Whatever, you lost 1-0, but at least you gave yourself a fighting chance.
Yeah.
We had someone say, that's a defeatist attitude.
Yeah.
No, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
You do what you have to do to win the fucking game.
Absolutely.
Mats Hummels is a goddamn legend.
Yeah. No, I agree. That was definitely a good point there. We definitely both agree on that one, man. Because
idiot. You're an idiot.
I honestly,
not you, Nick. I'm
sorry. No, I know. I actually honestly think that Coble could save a penalty. I mean, I 100% roll the dice and take it and see what happens. So, yes, man, I agree with you there. Just starting from the beginning, man, we watched that first half, and we when two times our, maybe even three, our heart rate goes through the roof, man. I mean, they had two chances where...
Oh, we jumped up a bunch of times.
Yeah, two chances. The Adeyemi, I mean, he had 10 feet in front of big, lanky Courtois. And who also, I will say, played an amazing match. I mean, the guy in Champions League finals is freaking Ben Bishop, freaking Crawford, all those guys. You can't get anything past them. Brick wall. And he showed that yet again, but I still feel Adeyemi has the skill and talent to kick that ball, chip it something past him, and that makes it 1-0. And even if they do make that, you get the chance from Fulkrug. You get that 1 centimeter more to the left, literally a centimeter, because the ball bounced almost directly with the line.
Yep.
And literally someone is right there in front. They tap it in and that goes, because Courtois is diving to the left. So that makes it 2-0. And I'm going to tell you what, man, you make that 2-0. I know I agree with your two. It's already 2-0 without it being 2-0. But BVB have a chance then. That's
maybe
when.
In that instance, maybe I'll say, because then BVB really just need to park the bus. You can't, you have to stop going forward at that point, because you can probably drain 45 minutes. You're going to probably concede one, but you might not get two. Real Madrid will definitely get one, but they might not get two. That's your only chance. If you keep Dortmund, though, where they fell short was, it was 0-0. They had to still keep going forward as well. And if you keep doing that with Madrid, you're eventually going to make a mistake and Madrid's going to capitalize.
Yeah.
If you are, in fact, up on the realistic scoreline, not the in-my-head scoreline of 2-2, if you're really up 2-0, Dortmund can send 10 guys in the box a la United versus Liverpool earlier this season and say, look, man, we're just going to sit here and we dare you to come beat us. Yeah. And Madrid, in that case, has to do what PSG was trying to do against Dortmund, which is just shoot, but it's blocked. It's this. Hummels played his ass off, by the way. I want to say slide tackle, perfect timing. The things that he did in that penalty box to make sure that Real Madrid didn't go ahead earlier than they did. Mats Hummels turned back the father time, and I saw 25-year-old Mats Hummels out there. I just want to say, again, what an effort he gave from start to finish. He left it all on the pitch. My God, he can be nothing but proud. He has to hold his head up high because he did everything in his power to make sure that Borussia Dortmund won that match. And just a little short, but, you know, his pace has fallen off. He was never the fastest to begin with. But his as I said, Nick, Mats Hummels' football IQ is elite. He is an elite, intelligent player. Yep. His timing is impeccable. So if he doesn't have to chase you down, if he's in the box with you and it's just him versus the ball, he can still stop you. And he frustrated Vinny Jr. unbelievably last Saturday. He frustrated Vinny Jr. a number of times. I got to say, Mats Hummels played his ass off. So he deserves a shout out.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. He had the chance to do the Luis Suarez. And he, just watching the replay, you can see it in his eyes. He was going to swat that ball. If he could have gotten it, he would have. So we move from the post hit there, and really, man, they controlled that game. Real Madrid, they skied a few shots over Coble. And really, man, it just was all Borussia Dortmund, man. It really was. And you know what? All Madridistas, all Madrid fans were definitely sweating. And yeah. You know what? They deserved it. BVB played their behinds off.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, man, it just wasn't enough. And Real Madrid capitalized. They got Nacho, who Jose Mourinho, the great, brought him on in 2011, I think it was, to play. And he is still there, still kicking, now captaining for Real Madrid. I mean, what a story there at a club where it's hard to stick around unless you're an absolute marvelous player like Cruz or Modric. You know what I'm saying. He's been there for this long, and the GOAT brought him in, and he's been there since. What a guy to get the first goal, and then, yeah, man, the bad pass, and then Vinicius Jr. scores that goal, and then really you just know it's over. There's just no.
And that goal, that was the mistake, right? That was a Dortmund unforced error. I mean, that's what it was. Yeah. It wasn't a brilliant Real Madrid build-up play. It was just Dortmund. They felt the pressure, and they caved under it. And so, you know, you give Vinny Jr. a one-on-one against Kobel, and yeah, he's not going to miss that. But I told you, I've said this, and you know, I don't. You score in a Champions League final, yes, but that wasn't Dortmund. Dortmund did more to contribute to that goal than Real Madrid did.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, and I said it. You still got to make it. You still got to kick it in between. I mean, you got players like Martial and Nunez for Liverpool. I will add for Liverpool because he'll score goals for Uruguay. But you still have to make it between those posts, and it just, he did. So that was 2-0. They're up, and you felt it, man. I mean, you texted me, and you said it yourself, man. You said, Nick, it's over. You were like, there's no, I think you said that. I mean, you were pretty much like, bro, it's done. Like, did you tell me that after 2-0?
At 2-0? This is after you left to go to work, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure at 1-0 you were like, no, we still got a shot here.
I said there's still some hope, yeah.
Yeah, but 2-0, you were like, okay, yeah, it's...
Yeah, 2-0, I was... Yeah, there's no coming back from that.
No, absolutely.
There's no coming back from that.
So, yeah, it was a hell of a final, man. I mean, Borussia Dortmund had a great trip there. Terzic, you won't see this again. I'm going to go ahead and predict this, man. He'll be fired after probably a season. They're going to extend his contract and regret it. I don't think that he'll make another run like this, a miraculous run. Things won't fall in place like they did this season, next season for Real Madrid, or not for Real Madrid, Jesus, all over the place. For Austria just scored, so I'm shook right now. So I don't think that things will fall in place for Borussia Dortmund like they did last season in the Champions League, and I just don't see him succeeding and getting them over that mark that they need. I just don't look that fondly at Terzic. I just don't. So, I mean, it ended sadly, but yes, hold your heads up high, Borussia Dortmund. You did very well. You were playing against the juggernauts, so not really many people gave you a chance. I mean, Borussia Dortmund was one of the biggest underdogs I've seen in a Champions League final.
Yeah,
I think in my whole time following, because even Real Madrid versus Juventus back in the 2017, even they gave Juventus a better chance, and I think Dortmund had a better chance than that Juventus side did against Real Madrid.
Absolutely, so, Juventus were beaten from minute one. Dortmund,
yeah,
Dortmund,
you see what I'm saying? Yeah,
Dortmund like, were the Dortmund were the better team for 70 minutes.
Yeah, so
not a single analyst, Nick, has debated that.
Yeah,
Dortmund punched Real Madrid square in the jaw.
Yeah, man, and you like you said, man, you got to hold your head up high, and really, man, you just got to move forward and try to add some players on and hope that you can repeat it. I don't see it happening because of Terzic and some choices he makes, but hey, prove me wrong, man. I mean, I said it before. I took Real Madrid to win 2-1 in the final. Picked it wrong. Picked scores wrong. I got the scoreline wrong 2-1, but I still thought they were going to win. I said it in our show. Prove me wrong, Borussia Dortmund. I want you to.
Yeah.
So, man, next season, let's just hope they can do well. I mean, I don't really care much about Bayern Munich. As you know, they are one of my most hated sides. Sure, they may bless me money-wise with gambling and whatnot, but I don't like them as a club. I think they've ruined Germany, but we saw last season that did change with the title going to someone else. So really, man, on the up and up, I hope Borussia Dortmund do well. I mean, they fought valiantly, and yeah, man, it was a good final. We did enjoy it. We had a great time. We enjoyed every second up to it. I know you did, especially.
I did.
They did well, man, and they showed that a German side could go all the way, and we just missed an all German final, as a matter of fact. So, yeah, man, what a hell of a Champions League final! What a hell of a Champions League season! All we can do is hope that next year we get something like it, because it was actually great to see the underdog story go all the way to the end, man. It really was.
It was, and with that, we will conclude our analysis on that game, because there's not really much else to say. I know that I, you know, want to say real quick, he's not listening, but, you know, Marcel Sabitzer, it's being said that he's missing out on some of the games with Austrian national team because he's dealing with kind of a depression from that match. He took it really hard, and, you know, I don't want to, you know, mental health is a very important thing to me, and I know you as well. So I really hope that he can get past that. I know people say it's just a game, but it's that on that stage, it's much more than a game. It's not just a game. It's a lot more than this isn't just Darmstadt versus Dortmund. This is,
yeah,
you know, you don't know if you're Real Madrid, you know, you will have more UCL finals. If you're Marcel Sabitzer, you don't know that. So yeah. this was the shot, right? You know?
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely, man. I like Sabitzer, man. He played at United for a little bit, had to deal with that depression, and now he lost in the final. But I tell you, man, as a sports fan and someone who's participated in sports and someone who also has dealt with addiction and a lot of depression issues, they can go hand in hand. And I will say, even though Sabitzer doesn't know it, the man has a lot to hold his head up high for. They were not predicted to be there. They didn't have a shooting chance in hell all the way back after PSV. So he has a lot to hold his head up high for. And I wish the best for Sabitzer, man. The guy's a legend in my eyes.
Yeah, he is. That's for certain.
And yeah, I remember he was at United for those shit the shit season, you know? And they sent him back to Borussia Dortmund like, we don't want you, and Sabitzer showed why. Dude, he was the reason why they beat, who was it, the before PS? I think he scored against Madrid Atleti, and he scored like a brace, or he had a goal in the first leg and second leg. Like, Sabitzer was a massive part of their success, man. He really was. What a hell of a player, man.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. But moving on. We have to talk about real quick. So Jose Mourinho, you called him the GOAT a little while ago. He has a new position. Yeah. So fill us in on that one.
Yeah, man. He had his first press conference for the Turkish legends, Fenerbahce. And I expect a lot, man. He's expected to win the title. They got second place with 99 points. Galatasaray were only able to outdo them with Mario Icardi absolutely lighting up the Turkish Super League. Jose Mourinho is expected to win the title, man. There's nothing less. There is expectations and whatnot at Fenerbahce, and they are really expected to win that title. You got Batshuayi, a Chelsea BVB legend. You got Fred from United. You have Dzeko. You have some players there who can play very well and win titles. I know they're a little bit on the end of their lifeline there, but Fenerbahce is definitely going to contend for that title. And to be honest with you, even though Galatasaray is very good in the Super League, I think that Jose gives them that little edge they need to win, because I'm telling you, to beat them is going to be very, very difficult. They're going to buy and spend on that back line and make the defense a lot tighter. And I'm telling you, we're going to see a lot of boat to score. No, not a lot of people are going to be scoring goals on Fenerbahce. And Fenerbahce will be scoring goals themselves, man, with the line, front line they have and who they have playing. I expect a lot. Tadic is still there. They are going to be doing a
Dusan,
lot. Dusan, yeah, Tadic. Dusan, yeah. The legend, man. Southampton. And then he was Tadic was a Ajax legend, and that's when Ajax was going to the Champions League semifinal. So they have talent there, man, and Jose is going to bring a lot of change, and those fans have a lot to be happy for. We're going to have a battle in the Turkish Super League next season.
Hey, so another thing. So, yeah, Jose Mourinho, excited to see what he's going to do in Turkey. That's going to be very interesting. It's I think, his first position since Porto, not in the top five leagues. I think I'm right about that. I'm pretty sure.
Absolutely.
Pretty sure. Yeah.
100%.
So that's going to be interesting to see what he can do more of at a not a tiny club by any means, because they're a massive club in Turkey, but, yeah, you know, out of the European limelight, you know, not Real Madrid, not Inter, not Chelsea, yeah, not Man United.
Yeah.
Where he is sort of hidden away. I don't feel like he's gonna be as under the gun, because the Turkish league is not as followed as the other five leagues are, if you count France in there. Certainly the four, you know, Serie A, Premier League, Bundesliga, and La Liga are certainly massive following. So yeah, it's gonna be interesting. The only one of those I don't think he's managed at is of the top four is Germany. So I was, you know, holding up possibility, maybe he could have gone somewhere there, but I just don't think that Bayern apparently didn't have any interest in him. And obviously Leverkusen is keeping Alonso for another year. And it looks like Dortmund's going to extend Terzic. And I agree with you about Terzic. I think he's a dead man walking. Just not.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, wow. I agree with you. I don't think he's the guy to lead him to move him forward. I think they caught lightning in a bottle. I think what you saw from him domestically, that's Edin Terzic. I think that is the bottling of the league, the guaranteed league title on match day 34, and you can't beat Mainz to win it. And it's just a choke job for all eternity. You lose the league on goal differential to Bayern Munich. And from that, you had the non-winning of the championship hangover going into this season. And Dortmund finished top five, which is Europa League, except this season, thanks to the Champions League expanding and Germany getting the coefficient, now top five means that you're in the Champions League. So they got saved by a rule change or a format change. They would have been in Europa League if this was last year. So it's the worst season for Dortmund domestically in a decade. And you have to, despite what they did in Champions League, Nick, that has to be counted.
Yeah.
That they were terrible domestically in terms of the expected finish after a nearly title winning season. You come in fifth. I mean, that's Napoli level bullshit right there, right?
I agree, man. They had an absolute horrible domestic season. And really, I already brought this up in the show, man. They fumble the bag, per se, the one season that Bayern Munich are absolute garbage. And they go in fifth, and someone like Leverkusen jump in and take the title when any other freaking year, who would have done it?
Dortmund.
So, yes, man, Terzic is not the guy. I wouldn't take him if my freaking life depended on it. He's going to kill me anyways. I'm going to die regardless. So,
yeah,
man, Terzic, I mean, they were better off getting rid of that guy and maybe moving on to someone else. But, I mean, sometimes you got to learn the hard way, you know. Sometimes you got to fall and scrape that knee to understand that, hey, I'm going to get hurt sometimes. We get up and we move on. So, yeah.
We do indeed. Hey, let's talk about international football real quick. So, a week from yesterday, the European Championship kicks off. And when does Copa America start? Same day?
Same day. It's the same night, if I'm not mistaken. It's an international football fan's dream. I mean, to have Euros in the daytime and then Copa America at nighttime when CONCACAF teams, the top teams, are participating in it. I mean, Lord have mercy. Thank you from the international gods. We have ourselves a great slate of international football coming up. So Friday you have your boys, Germany, kick off Euros, and then I'm trying to look here, I'm pretty sure we got Copa America at night, or it's the next day. I think it's the next day, man. let me see here. Copa America, main and fixtures. It's the 20th, man. So we got Euros the 14th, and then that next Thursday starts Copa America. So Euros will finish a week before Copa America finishes. So we have a week of Euros, and then immediately Copa America starts. So we actually could do a Euro show and then Copa America, or we can just do them both, you know? We probably should just do them both.
We'll discuss that.
So
you wanted to talk about, and I think this is great because you came up with this idea, you and I agree typically because you're a smart guy and I'm a smart guy. Two smart guys typically agree when there's one path forward and it's a smart move to go that way. However, this is one thing where you and I did a little bit disagree on, and the fact that England lost yesterday to 72nd ranked Iceland, and I think it's no big deal. I say NBD. And you said, okay, no, it is a big deal because I've said on numerous occasions that this is the most talented squad in the entire world right now, top to bottom, the 23 players. I think England has the best team on paper out of any international team. But you and I do both, what we do both agree on is that you have a complete idiot running the show in Gareth Southgate. And if any reason why England lose, it's probably going to be because of him.
Yeah.
So they're going to win. My thought is they're going to win in spite of that with their talent. But there's also a very good chance that the manager will F it up. So yeah. I've told you examples of how Germany has lost international friendlies before a major tournament and then gone on to finish either second place or even won the tournament. That's why I don't place a lot of stock in it. But you said a lot of people were talking about it yesterday. You said some podcasters, some influencers did entire shows on it. And I think that it's a bunch of hullabaloo over nothing. But I want your take on it because you follow international football closer than I do. So what are your thoughts? And I think that you and I agree. Am I wrong when you say you agree with me that England top to bottom are the most talented squad in the world on paper?
Dude, I'll say this, man. I mean, England has been the most talented side on paper for quite some time. I mean, the last tournament they were favored, they were on home soil, hands down, one of the best, most talented sides. I mean, from Jack Grealish to Phil Foden to Declan Rice to Harry Kane. I mean, the Jude Bellingham now, the list goes on and on. It's just they have fumbled it numerous times. Ernest Biner going in the end zone to win the AFC title and you're going to the Super Bowl and you fumble it on the 2-yard line. I mean, that's been England's story, and it's a story of depression and sadness. And I will say, going in this tournament, they are the favorite. One of my big people I follow, Mr. Goldbridge, has them still winning Euros despite Southgate leading them, just like you say. So you two share that same thought. I do think they will end up fumbling it. You still have France, you still have Germany, you still have some sides.
And that's where I disagree with you on the second one you just mentioned there.
Well, I know you do, and you know that's absolutely fine. I don't think they're necessarily gonna, you know, win it, but I do give them a fighting chance because they are at home. They will have all the fans. I know that doesn't mean a whole lot when you're playing this beautiful game of football, but you know, I've had my heart broken a lot, and believe me, it's going to get broken again. I just, for whatever, you got Italy, who are defending champions. They can somehow always flip it on when they need to. Defensively, they are one of the best. I don't care what anyone tells me.
They don't have, where they lack, Nick, is they don't have near the attacking power they had 15 years ago. So no real striker. And no, the midfield defense is Italy's specialty, but they are such a shadow of their former selves when it comes to especially the attacking, the front line. And that's where they're missing out. You know, when you had players like you mentioned before, Totti up front and that type of player, you don't have a Paolo Maldini or anyone like that in the back line anymore, but they still have a solid back line. But where Italy is just missing. You can't rely on someone like Ciro Immobile to carry your team to a trophy. You know, that's just, you're that's a tall ask, I will say.
Yeah, I mean, they only won the Euros. They only brought that trophy home because of three straight penalty misses from three of the youngsters, and that is something that's brought up all the time, is Southgate making that decision to pull those guys off and have them take those penalties. You're going to put that pressure on an 18-year-old? I mean, sure, you got to get it sometime, but he paid the ultimate price, and when it was coming home, it did not come home, and the dad that left for milk still has not arrived. You're still waiting for it to come home. So it's just, man, it's a conundrum, man, that Mr. Southgate's trying to unfuck, we will say, and, you know, to undo it, you're going to have to get over a few things. And, you know, what we saw against Iceland in a friendly, which we will say it is a friendly, and, you know, you brought it up, and this is why we're speaking about it. All I've seen is headlines of Southgate gone after Euros, Southgate out now, get him out. England lose 1-0 to 77th place Iceland. Iceland don't start starters, still beat England. Like, so their problem is right now is their finishing in the final third is just abysmal, and they cannot score goals, man. I mean, one or two shots on target, absolutely bad. A lot of people, you know, don't attribute much to it. I don't myself attribute much to it. This is just news in the international world, and I'm telling you, people they overhype these losses, and it really doesn't mean much, man. I don't place much on it. I will say that a lot of the guys are trying to not get hurt. You're playing in Euros here coming up real soon where you have a big chance to win. I do not place much on this. Losing to Iceland is definitely not good. You don't want to do that. They are 77th ranked. This isn't Iceland of 2016 who shocked the world and kicked England out. That's not this side. Gylfi's not in it. He's long gone. A lot of those Iceland players aren't playing
anymore. Isn't Gylfi out like sexually harassing women?
Gylfi settled his case out of court. He did have a sexual case for, I think it was a minor, something with a minor. Somehow it did disappear, I'm guessing money, or maybe he was actually innocent. Who the hell knows? But he is now playing in Iceland at Valur, one of his hometown sides, stadium capacity of like 10,000. So he's taking a hit, man. He was an Everton legend, and he was playing very well in the Premier League. He was one of the best midfielders for a season there, and he just completely fell off because of those accusations. But England, man, these friendlies don't really pay much attention to them. It's just all the Southgate talk is starting. And really, man, I just, you know, we're going to talk more about your episode. I don't give him
here's
much.
Here's a parallel I want to draw to what you're saying and what Mark said, right? I think Germany are a supremely talented team. And I said this yesterday to you. I don't have a single problem with the names on the back of the kits. Yeah. I think Musiala is world class. We just said Wirtz is one of the top players on the entire planet. He's by far Germany's player of the season in the Bundesliga for a team that went undefeated, that is still undefeated in domestically since over a year now. I don't have a problem with Ta. I don't have a problem with Neuer. I don't have a problem with any of those guys. Sané. I don't have a problem with Maximilian Mittelstädt. I think Germany are a top five team on paper, but they won't win the European Championship on domestic soil, much like England didn't win it. And I say, again, it comes down to the manager. I have never thought that Nagelsmann was a good fit for the national team, and this is why I told you this yesterday. Nagelsmann did not succeed as a player. And he was the problem was there wasn't enough time between his not succeeding as a player, not making it as a player. You know, you have a guy like Zidane that's won a World Cup and that's won Champions League and that's won La Liga titles and won French titles and all this stuff. And he is a wealth of knowledge. And he comes in and he manages Real Madrid. And then he wins three Champions Leagues consecutively. And you're like, well, maybe I should listen to Zizou because he might know a thing or two about football. You know, the guy did a lot in his career. Nagelsmann is going to tell Thomas Müller, who I think is the third or fourth highest scoring player in World Cup history. He's got 10 or 11 goals career, which is only three behind Miroslav Klose, who has the all-time record for most goals scored in a World Cup. So yeah, Thomas Müller has been a very successful national team player for well over a decade. What is Nagelsmann going to teach Thomas Müller how to do on a pitch? Now let's go one further example. Guy who's in the last twilight of his career. This is going to be the swan song. So however many matches Germany plays in this European Championship, that will be the number of matches left in the career of one Toni Kroos, okay? He ended it on a high club level, won his sixth Champions League, Real Madrid, last weekend. Wouldn't it be great if he could win the European Championship, Germany's fourth European Championship on home soil in his final match ever as a professional footballer? Yeah, got bad news for you, brother. It ain't going to happen. Again, someone like Toni Kroos, Nick, tell me, there's a respect level, right? He's basically a year or two, maybe 3 years younger than Nagelsmann.
Yeah.
What is Nagelsmann going to teach Toni Kroos how to do on a football pitch? Maybe Musiala, yes, who's 22 or 21. Yeah, I get that. But these veterans, these guys out here, Kroos, Müller, Neuer, they're not going to – that's why they said he failed at Bayern. Was the Bayern – Thomas Müller and Lewandowski are like, dude, you don't know jack shit. We know how to play football. What are you going to tell us? And it's like, well, he succeeded at Hoffenheim and he did okay at Leipzig. Leipzig, though, has a squad full of young players, and Hoffenheim were just basically willing to listen to anybody because they were facing relegation. Bayern Munich is big boy business, okay? They don't play around. The German national team is big boy business. Every single player on that team sheet is a veteran, and they've won trophies for the most part, okay?
Yeah.
Why should they listen to him? There's a level of respect that's not there in terms of my experience versus your experience, Nick. So let's just say, and I'm going to put this in real life, you go play for the Battery and you're just not that good. They're like, Nick, you know, you're really good on the sticks. You can play FIFA on the video game really well, but you're just not really a great professional footballer. So we're going to have to cut you or whatever. Or maybe you get injured. Who the hell knows? But you're not really that great. But then I come on, and I'm like Christian Pulisic, and I'm on the U.S. men's national team, and I'm starring for AC Milan. And then you somehow, some way, become the manager of the U.S. national team. And you're like, Critty, let me show you how to really play 4-2-3-1. And I'm like, bro, you couldn't play 4-2-3-1 if the instructions are written on a piece of paper for you, and I handed it to you. Like, what? That's my problem, is they needed a guy like a Mourinho, someone like that, that's like, oh, this guy's won almost 30 trophies. Even if it's a stopgap, just get them through the European Championship and then hire your next manager that's going to lead you into the 2026 World Cup. They went with Nagelsmann as a caretaker and then said, no, we're going to keep him through the Euros. And I think that was a big, big mistake, because these players – are looking at him and they're like, this is a little boy. This is a child. Thomas Miller's like, dude, and the funny thing is, Thomas Müller and Manuel Neuer, they know him because he managed them at Bayern. And they're like, we didn't listen to him then, we're not going to listen to him now.
Yeah, why listen to him?
So I pose that to you, Nick. What are your thoughts on that in terms of, I mean, like, I look at it, I've heard this. This is not my original thought. I'm not taking credit for this, and I'm not saying that it's me that came up with this thing. But I've heard from numerous different credible sources that there's a respect that was missing at Bayern towards Julian Nagelsmann, and that same respect or lack thereof has carried over into the German national team. And they are a dysfunctional unit with no gelling, no chemistry, no fluidity, and no real plan of attack. And by the way, they're also missing a clinical definitive number 9.
Yeah. No, I
agree. So what are your thoughts on that? Am I just crazy and all these people are crazy that think Nagelsmann's the answer?
Yeah, I didn't really understand Nagelsmann as this big, like, genius number 1 guy, like, bring him on to be our manager. He's going to do this and do that, cuz I mean, sure, he did well at Hoffenheim, but You said it best, man. This is Hoffenheim you're talking about. This
they were in desperate need, man. They needed anything.
Man,
a different voice.
Absolutely. Hoffenheim and Bayern Munich and German national team are two whole different entities.
I think he was 31 or 32 when he took over at Hoffenheim, man.
Yeah,
like he was a child.
Yes, it was some crazy. He was some. I remember that, and I remember whenever they did make that group stage in Champions League that one time, they kept talking about it because he was so young, man. It was just ridiculous.
He should have stayed at Leipzig for like 5 or 6 years. That's what he should have done.
I agree. He was not ready for that big, big, big league.
And Bayern sacked him. And Bayern sacked him for it.
Yeah, and he absolutely had it coming. I agree with you there.
One last thing. They also say that he has a massive ego, and he is very hard to get along with.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's another thing. Yeah, and so you butt heads with Toni Kroos, and he'll just kick you in the face.
Yeah, I know, man.
Like, why should I listen to you, and you're an asshole on top of it? Like, no, thank you.
Yeah, no, yeah, I'll pass. Yeah, and I mean, it's shown in some matches, man. We've seen, I mean, against Ukraine, there was no final finishing in that final third because they are lacking that nine, like you said, and they're missing that really. I don't like the setup they do. I don't like any of it, man. Seeing that setup, I mean, Musiala, you got Musiala, who's great on the wings, and really, it's just. I don't really understand it, man. I mean, it begs the question of what the hell are you thinking and what's going on? And it showed, I mean, they did come back from behind and win 2-1 against Greece yesterday. So we're not really saying much there. They were actually fighting to make the Euros. And that's that you don't want to, if you're fighting to get in the Euros, you're not necessarily the best. I mean, it is a difficult tournament to get in, but you know, you do have a lot of teams that do make it, you know, Swiss, Austria, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, Greece isn't the best side, and they did come back and beat them. Havertz and Pascal Gross scored at the end. But, you know, I'm with you, man. I don't like the Nagelsmann choice. I think that was bad, and you know, they're going to pay for it. It's on home soil, and this was really a chance for them to really do something, and I think they are wasting it. I do think they're going to do a little bit better than you're predicting. I know we're going to get into that a little bit more next show.
Nick, your stats against the Ukraine, Germany 27 shots to Ukraine 6, but 5 shots on target out of 27. Ukraine had 3 shots on target out of 6. So actual chances created, Ukraine created 2 less with 21 shots less.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. Yeah. There's something wrong with that picture.
Yeah, there's
62% definitely possession, 92% pass accuracy. They had 11 corners to 2.
Jesus, yeah.
And they couldn't score.
Nope. They were lost on the pitch, I call it. It was really bad, man. It really was. And watching it hurt my brain. Ukraine actually had
this lineup, though, Nick. Listen to this. Yeah. This is it. This is what really gets me. Kai Havertz, Jamal Musiala, Ilkay Gundogan, Florian Wirtz, Pascal Gross, Andrik, Joshua Kimmich, Vladimir Antón, Jonathan Tah, Maximilian Mittelstädt, and Manuel Neuer. That is a ridiculous all-star lineup of who's who in German football, and they couldn't score a single goal. Nothing.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous, man, and that's why I tell you, and everyone else need to expect nothing from the German national team. And it is a shame because they literally could win this tournament based on the talent on the roster, but they won't. And I've told you yesterday, and I'll stick by it, I will be surprised if they make it out of the group stage. I will be surprised if they make it out of the group stage. Prove me wrong, Germany. Show me. I grew up there. It's my fucking country.
Yeah.
I want them to win. I want them to win every game. But I have seen the decline of this team since 2016.
Yeah.
And the embarrassment at the World Cup in Russia in 2018 as defending champions.
Yeah.
And the embarrassment at the European Championship in England.
Yeah.
I have no hopes for this.
Yeah.
They did nothing in the Qatar World Cup. Did nothing in the Qatar World Cup.
Yeah. No.
Three tournaments now in a row, Nick. They have completely crapped the bed. They had a deep run in 2016 at the Euros in France. So it's been 8 years since we saw the German national team do anything worth talking about. So I'm sorry, after about a decade of getting your ass handed to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just don't have high hopes.
Yeah, until something changes, you really got nothing to expect. And you kind of,
By the way, let's talk about this. Musiala is a, I don't know how many time German champion with Bayern. Havertz just finished with the great, one of the greatest seasons in Arsenal history. Florian Wirtz is a German champion. Gundogan's a former German champion, also English champion with City. Andrick is a German champion now. Kimmich is a multiple-time German champion and Champions League winner. Valdemir Antone just had the greatest season in Stuttgart history. Jonathan Tah is now a German champion. Mittelstädt just had the greatest season in Stuttgart history. And Manuel Neuer has won everything that there is to win. World Cup, Champions League, domestic cup, everything. Everything there is to win, Manuel Neuer has won it. You're telling me that that group that I just named you, how many trophies, how much success, they can't beat a war-torn country that doesn't even know where their capital is right now?
Yep, in the middle of a war.
I'm sorry. This is abysmal. This is abysmal.
Yeah. I mean, they really.
Goddamn, Yarmolenko is still playing for Ukraine.
Yeah, he is. Yes, dude. I'm telling you, Dybov, I think the Girona player, the guy who a lot of people actually want now, scored a goal in the 90th that they called off for offsides, and I swear that almost counted, and I was like, dude, Germany's going to lose, and it wouldn't have shocked me at all.
I will say
I was shocked that they came back and won 2-1 yesterday. That was their last tune-up before the
89th minute, Nick. They took them 89 minutes to beat Greece.
Yes. Pascal Gross scored. I sent you the text. I said Gross for the winner.
Hey, you want to know? You want to hear these stats? These are great.
Yeah, Greece. Yeah,
12 shots for Germany, 14 for Greece.
Yeah,
shots on target for Greece, 6. Shots on target for Germany, 5. Possession, 70% for Germany, 30% for Greece. Corners, 13 corners for Germany, 3 for Greece. Just ridiculous. Ridiculous. Yeah. The lineup, mind you. Let's go. So you talked about this guy leading up the Champions League final. They made one switch to the back line. They switched out Antone with this guy. You ever heard of this guy named Rudiger?
Yeah.
Supposedly he's won a few trophies, I heard.
Yeah.
So he was a switch, Rudiger, who's a world class center back.
Absolutely.
Then the front six, no changes except for Toni Kroos was started. And actually he got a very high rating. He was actually their best player on ratings, was Toni Kroos.
Yep.
Which I would expect nothing less of. Andrick, you and I have had our issues with Andrick in the past few weeks. He was the lowest rated player on the pitch. But again, Havertz, Gundogan, Wirtz, Musiala, they're up front. That's your front four, and Kroos and Andrick were your number sixes. And I don't even know these players for Greece. I don't know. Not one name looks familiar to me. And a complete disappointment in every way. I mean, they won 2-1, and I can say that this is a team that Germany should have blown away 4-0. All I can say is I am hopeful and optimistic, and I could be wrong, that this is just one of those things where Germany is sleeping at the wheel before the big tournament. They know they got to put 150% in starting next Friday, and they just, like they've done so many times in the past, not the past three tournaments, but in the past as in the past in general. Flip the light switch, and all of a sudden, the German national team is a dominant force. But that was under Joachim Löw, that was under Franz Beckenbauer, that was under whoever have you, Jurgen Klinsmann. Even Nagelsmann, I just don't have any faith in, and I'm going to have to be completely wrong about my beliefs, and he's going to have to prove me wrong for me to change those. I just don't see it right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely not very promising, man. You're not wrong at all in this whatsoever. I just, I don't know, man. I want to contribute a little bit of the home stuff to maybe a possible at least getting out of the group and maybe a first round playoff win, maybe. But I definitely see them maybe getting out that group. It's just, I know we're going to cover it more so in depth next time, but I'm with you, man. I don't really expect much because of what we have seen in the past, man. I mean, you're absolutely right. What do we have to look forward to looking at these two matches and then what they've done the last 10 years?
I also want to ask you this. I switch the subject real quick because we talked about it earlier today. So the Copa America, you talked about the fact that Team USA, the United States men's national team, are the fourth highest favorites. And I wonder what kind of crack the books are smoking to make that prediction, because the last time I looked, the United States men's national team hadn't won anything of note in its history. I mean, if you count in gold cups, then you're a moron. And, you know, you can, if you're beating CONCACAF teams, then you're not beating anything. And so I'm just wondering, where is that coming from? Where is this? What has the United States men's national team done to instill that type of confidence in the books to say they are the fourth highest favorite to win Copa America behind Brazil, Argentina, and Uruguay? Am I missing something? What is this?
I just think it's the insurgence of the youngsters, the guys that have come up for the United States, and how they did against Mexico, who is also on the down as we saw as they lost 4-0.
You and I dedicated almost an entire show a few months ago to saying that beating Mexico is not enough anymore.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I agree. And you know, the books usually, they know something we don't, because they get it close pretty much a lot, or else Vegas wouldn't be open 24 hours. We both know that. I don't think they're right on that necessarily, because I would say Colombia actually has the same odds. So you could say they're the fourth and fifth best, because Colombia are right there with USA at plus 1,000. But I don't know, man. I mean, there's a lot of hype behind the United States just because of the American aspect of it. But as a football stance, it's kind of crazy that they are fourth. I agree with you. And we're going to see just how good they can do. We do have a warm-up match today in a few hours against Colombia that we'll be watching.
I'll be watching that.
Yeah, so that'll be on, and they're not really favored there. Colombia's a favorite there, but to be fourth shocked me too.
Do you see that? Okay, let's rewind. Hold on. Time out.
Yeah.
They're not favored against Colombia
today, yes.
But they are favored, the fourth highest favorite to win the Copa America.
Yeah.
There's something wrong with that logic.
Yeah, it's.
Do you see what I'm saying here?
Absolutely.
We're not favored. The United States is not favored to beat Colombia, but they are the fourth highest favorites. None of those countries, by the way, are named Colombia that I mentioned. It's Argentina, Brazil, and Uruguay. Yes. All three of them are elite national teams.
Yeah.
And then the United States, I do not consider, and would I ever say the words elite and United States national team, men's national team, in the same sentence?
Yeah, it's definitely not something you will hear a lot, or you hear anybody say, because they haven't really won anything. And I say haven't really because the only thing they do have is CONCACAF stuff, and CONCACAF isn't the best. I agree with you, man. And it's really just a hype machine, man. I really feel that the books are hyping them up a little bit more than they should. And man, you know what? We're about to see, my friend, put up or shut up. This is where Greg, if he does not perform, he will be fired, and we can finally move on, because guess what, man? The biggest tournament on the face of the earth is coming to our backyard, my friend. So now is the time for the United States men's national team to show the world that they could be better and could possibly do something like maybe get out of a group or win a playoff match finally since 2010. So, yeah, man, I mean, I don't really give them much credit yet. I don't think they're the best fourth best side in Copa America. They are missing Sergino Dest, who me and you both can say is a massive blow, because guess who was schooling Mexico the match we watched?
Yeah, well, I know. Dest was
Sergino
having
Dest,
a great game.
Man.
Yeah.
So we're going to see today without Dest how they're going to do, and I don't think it's going to be very well. So, yeah, man, we got a lot to look forward to with this side and Copa America and Euros. I just think that them being fourth best along with Colombia in the odds is crazy. Today, Colombia is plus 145. America is plus 180. So they are considered the favorite. It is very slight, but they are considered the favorite. And to say that and then have USA right there in fourth in Copa America is also crazy, man. I agree with you. It is the
best
friendly.
Thing that Greg Berhalter ever did was play for 1860 Munich. That's he is
Munich
just,
legend. Yeah. Yeah. Greg is not, I don't favor Greg a lot, man. Greg has issues. The whole stuff behind Gio Reyna was crazy behind closed doors, not really getting along with these players much. It's a lot to be said, man. And really, I hate to say it, I hope they don't do well in Copa and you get rid of him while you can. Not to mention, they've already fired him once, bro. They brought him back.
I know.
The Federation, the United States Federation, the rules they have with MLS is a joke. What they did with Greg is a joke. A lot of it is a joke. And what they do is, I can't take it serious, man. And really, for the future of American football, I just hope they make a lot of these changes within the next 10, 20 years.
So here's what
we can get better. Go ahead.
Suggesting Carlo Ancelotti said that he is going to finish his career at Real Madrid and he will not seek out any further clubs or national teams. And I said America needs to pay him $100 million to come out of retirement and coach the men's national team in 2026. That is the only shot that the United States has if Carlo Ancelotti manages them to do anything of note in the 2026. They will fail on home soil just like they did in 1994. They will fail on home soil to beat the big boys. They might get out of the group, but Brazil, who won the World Cup in 94, sent them home, and they will be sent home again by somebody like that. And, you know, it's a matter of when are you tired of losing in the round of 16.
Yeah.
When are you going to get tired of it?
Yeah.
You've only advanced past the round of 16 once in this entire century. And that was the very first World Cup of the century in Korea. And it took them, by the way, and we said, who did they beat to get to the round of, to get to the quarterfinals? Mexico. And we already said, you know, that's the only team they can beat that's decent or you know, that's noteworthy, that has any kind of international recognition, let's put it like that.
Yeah, is Mexico.
So, and that's not enough at this point anymore. You know, they have to. So, you know what? If they prove me wrong, okay. I want all the abuse. Give it to me. I'll take it. But you know what? I have so much history in my favor of the U.S. men's national team shitting the bed.
Yeah, of course.
I'm not afraid of it. I will say right now, they will not go far in the Copa America. They will probably lose to Colombia tonight.
Yeah.
And, I just don't see how you are not favored to win a match against Colombia, but yet you are the fourth highest favorite in a tournament that has some of the best international teams on the planet playing in it. Yeah. By the way, I do not consider the United States men's national team to be a part of.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Because the World Cup is in the nation next year, they did add the CONCACAF teams. So it is pretty weird. I mean, it's funny, in Copa America, we had Japan and Qatar last time because they had to add a couple teams, and then Qatar was playing, hosting the World Cup, so they couldn't, there was no need for them to play in the Asian stuff. So Qatar played in the Copa America, and they actually, man, it's kind of funny, I think they made the playoff. It was funny, man, in Copa America. Of course they got beat, but yeah, it's kind of weird seeing them in it. But dude, I mean, this is it, man. Put up or shut up. You know, we got a lot of listeners who like the United States men's national team. They like Serie A. We give them what they want, man. And you know what? Show us why you follow them. You know, United States win tonight. Luis Diaz will be there. A lot of the Colombian stars will be there. USA team, everyone's going to be there but Dest. Let's see what you got, man, and prove Mr. Critty wrong. Hell, prove me wrong, because I don't believe in him either. I don't think they're going to do shit.
I'm about to say, it's not just me.
No, it's not. I agree, man. I don't really put much in him, and all the listeners who talk to me know, man, I don't really put much stock into the United States men's national team. It's just Zlatan said it when he come. It's a sport of privilege. Not everyone cares about it. It's not like Europe. This isn't what, you know, the country itself really cares for. And it shows in our national team with football, man. So, you know.
Yeah, and I want to before we close out, that is a very good point that in the United States, it's a sport of privilege. You know, whereas egg ball and basketball seem to, even baseball to a lesser extent, but still maybe where you're having to overcome the odds, like you need to succeed at this in order to succeed at life. You see so many stories like Allen Iverson, who becomes a Hall of Famer, but I mean, he grew up in absolute poverty in some of the worst neighborhoods in America. And it's that basketball for Allen Iverson was not a sport of privilege. It was a sport of necessity. And where you have, you know, Pulisic is just, you know, he's from a suburban family in Pennsylvania, and you know, daddy has a good job and this, that, and the other. And, you know, Europe is like, you know, 14, 15, 16, your club level, you're getting signed at 16 to a Liverpool or to an Everton or to a Man City or to Bayern Munich. And if you don't make it, bro, you're done. Like you're done. Your career is over. You might get to play for Energie Cottbus, or you might get to play for, you know, Borussia Dortmund B or Ulm or Regensburg. But I mean, you're never going to make it. You've got one shot. You've got one shot to make it in the big leagues, and that shot could come very early in life. You know, Erling Haaland was a teenager when he was playing in Norway and Dortmund signed him. And he was one of the ones that took his opportunity and made the most of it. Now he's elite level, some might say the best striker in the world. So it's just one of those things where, you don't have that kind of hunger in the United States. The domestic, the kids that grow up here don't have that same, it's like tennis, you know, it's like it's a leisure sport, you know?
Yeah, absolutely, man. I agree with you completely. And until that really changes, man, I hate to say it, you know, we're just going to be second fiddle, third, fourth fiddle sport in the country. And it's going to show when we do these international tournaments, man. And it's sad because really I would love to see us succeed. And I'm just going to be stuck with a team that makes group stage and then probably loses in the playoff to Netherlands or Poland or Ukraine or something like that.
Yeah.
And or even, you know, Ghana or somebody. It's just those countries care so much more. And it just it reflects on the pitch because we can't put the talent out needed to beat these sides because our talent pool isn't as big. It is big, but it's not as big as some of the others, man. And you know, we've covered it a lot when we do talk about the United States men's national team. And it's the truth, man. It's the sad truth. We're probably not going to be good enough to really do anything on the world stage. Now, have we gotten better? Maybe, sure, a little bit. Okay, cool. But we're never going to be like Germany or any of those, you know, England and stuff like that. Just
you know, the thing that's missing, Nick, is it's not just the hunger, but like the German national team, it just, you know, 4 World Cups, 3 European Championships, France, Spain, Italy, it's pride. They're so proud of their footballing history. The United States on the men's side has no footballing history.
Yeah.
The women do. The women have prestige, and the women, they go out there and they show out. I mean, that's like, this is, again, I want to make clear. I say every time I say United States men's national team, I mean the men's national team, because I cannot say a negative thing about the women. They have absolutely changed the game in every aspect of it. And that's not what's up for debate here. The Italian men's national team, German men's national team, France, Spain, England, Portugal, Argentina, Brazil, they play, that's life and death, man. They play for pride. They are so proud to wear those colors. It's like they would die in that kit. You know what I'm saying? Oh, like, you know, and we don't have that same urgency, man. You can see it. There's not the same amount of passion, not the same amount of pride. And somebody, some generation has got to be the one to break through and say, the red, white, and blue, we're playing, the red stands for blood. Right. Yeah. That's what has to be kind of at stake. And it's never been. It's just kind of like, well, we lost. Yep. I mean, Brazil beat us. Of course, Brazil looks at the United States and they think they're a joke.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, this is if Brazil lost the United States men's national team, they would, the suicide rate would spike in that country.
Jesus, they'd burn cities down. Yeah.
Yeah. It would be a shame. They would be in shame.
Yeah.
And that's the difference, Nick. That's the difference right there. What I just said is there's the United States men lose to Brazil. No shame. Yep. No shame. They're better than us, right? They're better
Absolutely,
than us.
Man. Yeah.
What are you going to have in your mind? No, we're better than you. And that's the difference. Germany, Brazil, those teams I just mentioned, I'm not going to go back through the list. They, in their mind, say, God, we are better than you. We are better than you. You are about to get owned and cooked, my friend.
Yeah.
And the United States, I have never seen the men, the women, absolutely. The men have never had a killer instinct. They've never had that killer instinct. And they've also never had the manager to instill that killer instinct. But maybe the closest was Jurgen Klinsmann because he's been there and done that before. But Greg Berhalter, what the hell has he ever done? Yeah, he played for 1860 Munich and Energie Cottbus and had 19 appearances for Crystal Palace. Yip-de-fucking-do.
Yeah.
Wow, yeah, what a career. What a career.
Yeah, yeah.
Woo! As Ric Flair would say, woo!
Yeah. and it's funny because Mexico lost 4-0 to Uruguay, and then they play Brazil tonight. I mean, dude, 4-0 to Uruguay? How do you think they're going to play against Brazil tonight? And Mexican fans are sick to their stomach. United States would lose 4-0 to Uruguay. I could ask 10 people on the streets of Charleston and maybe one or two would know that they lost. Maybe, if we're lucky. So really, until that changes, man, we're just not going to see much change, man. I mean, we just aren't, and it's sad. Yeah.
Well, my friend, I will see you tonight for the U.S. game against Colombia, the hashtag prove us wrong game. We'll see. Yeah.
It's on TNT, so I'll have it on, man. I've already looked. I already got text about it. I'll turn it on, man.
Well, I'll see you there. Anything else you want to say in closing before we switch to next week, which is our preview shows for the two big tournaments?
No, man. Yeah, no. I'm excited for the Euro and Copa America coverage, and yeah, man. That's it. I'm actually really excited for Euros, man. I'm really happy. Last time we had Euros, it was COVID time right after it, so the world was just kind of getting back in groove, and now world's going. We are in movement, and it's going to be really exciting to watch it, man.
Yeah. All right, my friend. Well, let's turn the lights out. I will see you later on today. I have a special gift for you, as you know.
Yes.
And wear it proudly. Use that as your motivation to trim up, as you said.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, sir.
It's a player issue, man. It's tight. I'm telling you, man, this fucking thing is tight.
I'm telling you, I've been working so hard on that. So, yeah, I'll be in it by
November. You don't want to end up like Lautaro with the damn,
the beer gut.
No. He needs to lay off the celebration. He needs to lay off the celebration.
Yeah.
All right, buddy. Let's get out of here, and we'll do it all again next week. Thanks, everyone, for listening again. We love you guys. Love you, gals. Thank you for the support. And if you can, please leave us a nice review. And other than that, we will see all of you here again next week in the basement.
All right. See you.